Our next segment here on Current State is our weekly Tuesday segment that focuses on the Great Lakes. It is produced in conjunction with the Knight Center for Environmental Journalism here at Michigan State University. The dependent relationship between energy and water is an important component of the Great Lakes energy future. But in this water-rich region, it's a relationship that's easy to overlook. Skip Pruce is a principal at Five Lakes Energy and a former deputy director of the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality. Earlier this week, I spoke with Skip about the water-energy nexus. He said the connection between the two is not something to ignore.
There are deep connections, a deep interconnectivity between water and energy, which is really not largely appreciated. We use water in producing all our forms of energy. If you looking at electricity in the Great Lakes region, we have 144 coal plants, and those plants use tens of billions of gallons of water every day. In fact, 76% of all freshwater withdrawals in the Great Lakes region are for thermoelectric generation, for our coal plants, our natural gas plants, and our nuclear plants. So we use a lot of water in producing electricity, and that has consequences.
So are people generally not very aware of the role of water in energy production?
Well, let me connect some of the dots. So when we use that water to produce power, the water is used principally to cool the power plants. And so when that water is discharged after cooling the power plants, it has a temperature that's elevated. And that elevated temperature can affect aquatic communities, ecosystems. It can lower the dissolved oxygen rate. It can produce algae. That's a problem on the Great Lakes. So that's one kind of problem. Another kind of effect associated with water and energy is mercury pollution. So out of the smokestack from these plants in the Great Lakes comes about 13,000 pounds of mercury every year. And that mercury, some of it, is deposited in the lakes, which accounts for our fish advisories that we have that for all of our Great Lakes that we've had for almost three decades. So that's another impact from the nexus of water and energy that people might not realize.
We've also been learning that quite a bit of water is used in hydraulic fracturing recently, right?
Well, that's the thing, and that's a really important issue for the future, because we produce fuels, oil and gas, for a very long time, and with modest amounts of water being used, at least comparatively to the production of unconventional fuels like shale gas from fracking, or what is called tight oil from these new oil formations and enhanced oil recovery. So these unconventional means of producing oil and natural gas use much more water than the old methods. And so a fracked natural gas well can use upwards of 20 million gallons of water to produce that natural gas. And that water is then permanently sequestered. Most of it is not recycled. It is permanently sequestered by deep well injection to make sure that it's not a threat to water supplies or our lakes and streams, or so it doesn't contaminate the land. But the point is that those quantities of water are forever gone, no longer available for human use.
Hmm. Now, on the reverse side, not only is water being used up in energy production, but large amounts of energy are being used to treat and move water through pipelines. Tell us about that.
Well, that's true, Mark. Water is heavy. It weighs more than eight pounds per gallon. And so for our water supplies, for your drinking water supply and mine, we are drawing a lot of water in. We're then treating it, and then we have to distribute it through a massive infrastructure. And that uses a tremendous amount of energy. In fact, 4% of all energy, of all electricity, is used to supply water one way or another. In California, where they have to bring water long distances, almost 20% of all electricity use is just for water supply.
So National Geographic's International Energy Agency reports that if current trends continue, the amount of water consumed in producing energy will double by the year 2035. What does that mean for the Great Lakes region exactly?
Well, so here's the really interesting part of all this. We, in the United States, there are 36 states that face really acute, chronic, persistent water shortages. And they're going to have energy needs and increasing energy needs in the future, and they're going to be water constrained. We are water rich in the Great Lakes. In fact, we are globally unique in the availability of fresh water to all of us. And I think that's underappreciated too. 18% of the entire world supply of fresh water surrounds Michigan. So we're water rich, and we don't think about conservation or the use of that water. But we should be setting an example. We should be the best stewards of this globally unique resource, because if we're not, then it's going to be more difficult to protect that water when other states have acute needs that drive them to look at our water and want some of it.
Well, specifically, Skip, how do we become better stewards then?
Well, there recently have been a survey of water practices around the country, all 50 states, and Michigan scored a D in that survey. And the reason is, because we're so water rich, we haven't done what other states have done. We don't really have conservation measures in place. We don't do water conservation planning. We don't have standards for shower heads and toilets and clothes washers and such. Many other states do. We need to be better stewards of our water supply. Like I said, this exists nowhere else on the planet. And if we don't set an example, then we don't. It's going to be difficult for us to say no when others turn to the Great Lakes region and want to build pipelines or otherwise ship our water to other places.
Recently in Michigan, we've started to see lower water levels in the Great Lakes, which are due in part to the changing climate in the region. Assuming climate continues to change in the Great Lakes and across the nation, is demand for water going to more closely resemble that of oil?
Well, so this is such a great point, because we've been talking about water and energy and the interrelationship between those two things, but the interrelationship of climate to water and energy is just really important as well. So with the elevated temperatures, we have greater evaporation in the Great Lakes. In fact, the Great Lakes, we now know, are heat sinks. 92% of the, quote, global warming, unquote, of 92% of that heat has gone into our oceans, so very little in the atmosphere, but it's also going in our freshwater lakes. So we're heating the lakes, and there's more evaporation. And so let me give you an example of what that means for Michigan on a local basis. I now live in Leelanau County, which produces cherries and a lot of other fruit. And the reason the climate is so great in Leelanau County for fruit growing is that every year, the Grand Traverse Bay would freeze, and the waters in Lake Michigan, at least the near shore waters, would freeze. And that was an agricultural thermometer. Yet that ice kept spring temperatures lower, delaying the buds of the fruit trees, making them less susceptible to late frost. Well, we no longer have that ice. Where in prior decades, the Great Grand Traverse Bay froze every year, it no longer does so. And as a result, the fruit trees are susceptible to the late frost, and we've had two catastrophic killing frosts in the last 10 years. So, that's a direct effect of climate change, which is directly affected by fossil fuel-based electricity production.
I'm curious about renewable energy here. Does renewable energy production require a lot of water?
Well, that's one of the advantages of renewable energy systems. Wind energy, solar, photovoltaic energy doesn't require any water at all, except in the production process to produce the actual equipment. But it doesn't use water, and therefore doesn't have these kinds of effects. Now, there are large solar farms that also rely on cooling water, but in the Southwest, which of the United States, which faces really pretty severe water issues. And so we'll probably see less of those, but as a general proposition, renewable energy systems avoid the water issues that plague fossil fuel generation and nuclear generation.
Skip Pruce is the principal at Five Lakes Energy. He is the former deputy director of the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality. We've been talking about the water energy nexus in the Great Lakes region. Thanks, Skip.
You're welcome, Mark.